God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. So we're 5 years after the decision was made to lock down important aspects of the American economy, but more importantly, American life. And the Boston Globe recently published a piece where they used a book to make the case against Fauci and Collins and Burks and all of the technocratic medical class who apparently, you know, made mistakes and such. They just goofed. It's not exactly the way the piece is written. They do suggest that there was panic and fear and politics, and that's all true. But you cannot do a confessional piece like this without going to the full project. This piece, I think, purposely misses the most important aspect of the lockdown. The single most important aspect of the lockdown was it was planned and rehearsed well in advance. It was scripted, and then it was carried out. Event 201 was just that. Here's how we're going to do it. And then they did it. 5 years later, we finally have the Boston Globe willing to admit that politics helped drive a lot of this fear, panic, they say, but they're unwilling to admit it was planned. There were a lot of people who panicked, for sure. There were well-meaning local public health officials who panicked because people they had been taught to believe were their betters were telling them, we're going to see a 3 to 10% death rate of Americans. 30 million dead Americans? So since people are looking back 5 years later, I wanted to take an opportunity to look back 5 years later, or 5 years ago, but by virtue of looking at today, right now, it's happening in front of us. They're using the same exact methodology with the same exact outcome in mind, which is the magic, beautiful platform technology sold as vaccines. Same thing is happening to you. And it's happening under Donald John Trump, the President of the United States of America. So let's go to first an important piece of framing. John Stewart has popularized and I think invented a very important technique for a propagandist. Clown on, clown off. His writers, his team of writers who put words in front of him, and he, I'm sure, ad-libs, and he is responsible for the delivery. God has made him a comedic genius. And the team of people who write for him are unbelievably skilled as a team. But he does this clown on, clown off thing. It's brilliant because it's hard to defend against. If you're doing an interview with Stewart and you're debating him, at any time he wishes in a studio audience that adores him, he can go into the clown on technique, in which case all you can do is respond with laughter or try to compete with him as a comedian. You lose because his material is written in advance. Or you can try to go fact to fact with him, and often you can beat him there, but then he goes back to the clown on thing. Well, I'm just a comedian. He went and had a discussion overseas about state media. So listen here to John Stewart's mock reaction to learning about Hungary's state media.
So you're saying if you have a media machine that purposefully lies to its people to maintain a political fiction and get themselves power, that is the hallmark of an authoritarian system, not a democratic system?
Absolutely.
Well, if we were ever to get something like that in the United States, we would be horrified, furious, to know that there was an entire media organization designed to bend reality, to manipulate facts, to maintain power. It would, if I may, and I don't, I'm not trying to slam Hungary, it would never happen in the United States. It's just not, I almost can't even conjure it, imagine it. It must be very difficult to live in a country where one media organization, out of whole cloth, knowingly, explicitly, maybe even in meetings behind the scenes, might say, we're lying to our audience, and then call for news people to be fired for telling the truth. I mean, if something like that happened in the United States, it would be a dark day indeed. So I appreciate you raising the alarm bells for us.
A lot of ways to perceive that. Perhaps Stewart is truly, truly shocked. Perhaps he's suggesting that Fox News is just that entity. But we cannot have a discussion looking back 5 years ago from the lockdowns without mentioning the fact that Fox News helped with it. Full stop. So did MSNBC, CBS, ABC, PBS, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, Seattle Times, Los Angeles Times, AP, Reuters, Bloomberg, all of them. All of them helped. They helped in ways that you can instantly know were disingenuous. Such as this. No one who is not brain damaged, and I don't mean that to be snarky, I mean psychologically traumatized to the degree that they're brain damaged, no one can believe that walking into a restaurant, wearing the mask, and then taking it off when you sit down protected you. No one is capable of believing that. The Mockingbird Media was not capable of believing it. Or this. How is it that I, a community college dropout, started with common sense on the masks and said, oh, hey, you know, when you wear those things, you can smell cantaloupe in the fruit section of the grocery store. That means there are little tiny bits of cantaloupe in my beak that made it through the mask. How then can it stop microscopic viral molecules? And then going to the magic Google machine, looking up the size of the openings in surgical masks, finding out that it's 1/10 of 1 micron, and then looking up the size of a viral particle, finding out it's 1/100th of a micron, meaning 100 molecules of the virus can fit into one single microscopic hole of a surgical mask. I figured that out in days because of the magic Google machine. The Boston Globe didn't. The New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Fox News, Bloomberg, Reuters, Los Angeles Times, Seattle Times, Washington Post didn't. You're telling me there were no reporters in those organizations smarter than me? I'm here to tell you they're all smarter than me. Or on the lockdowns themselves. Was it only my grandma who taught me to get fresh air and sunshine when we were sick? On the lockdowns, it was just us, who could avail ourselves of CDC research and a paper that was written after mass study about lockdowns. And they came out with a recommendation in a paper the CDC held. Do not lock down in the case of an upper respiratory virus. It is, in fact, counterproductive unless you seize the first 9 people who get the virus and lock them away. I found that, and the people in the Mockingbird Media didn't. Five years after the lockdown, let's remember something else. They never locked America down. That never happened. That never occurred. Here's what I mean. When the lockdowns began, I was doing radio in one of the most enthusiastically tyrannical cities in the country. And by the way, interestingly and not coincidentally, it's one of the most godless cities in America. And that is the fallen country of Seattle, where just yesterday, I learned that a lawyer arguing a criminal case where the defense is the Constitution, it's a free speech case. This is a guy being charged with crimes for speaking on social media to his son. The judge said, you're not allowed to mention the Constitution. To a lawyer who says the Constitution is his defense. That's Seattle. I was doing radio, praise God, from Idaho into that lockdown city. They never locked us down. City buses still rolled. So homeless people who could not bathe most of the time still got on buses. Why? Because every time the wheels on the bus went round and round, the federal government sent Seattle money because the buses were moving. During that lockdown period in that lockdown city, while the Mockingbird Media and Seattle Times were calling me a disinformation spreader, while the governor referred to me by inference as a murderer, he said I was a bioterrorist. There was an outbreak of hepatitis, the sort that spreads by casual contact, in a homeless camp. The same city that was forcing little kids to wear woke masks, that was forcing people, sometimes with cops throwing them to the ground, to wear masks if they walked in to get a piece of fruit from a grocery store, refused to shut down that homeless camp. They refused to address the reality that that was happening because it would stigmatize unhoused people. Hepatitis was okay to spread. COVID would kill everybody. So the Boston Globe is out with this piece. And I want to go through it because I think it's vitally important to go through. And I will tell you why it's vitally important to go through. And we're going to go through it in the next segment. But let me tell you why I think it's vital to go through it. Because they're doing it again. And let's not rely on my words. Let's rely on Peter McCullough's words, which we'll get to in the next segment. Canada just decided to order the killing of ostriches. Farm ostriches. Oh, they're not going to test to see the ostriches who have developed natural immunity to the bird flu, because the ostriches that are living have probably developed immunity, meaning herd immunity. They're going to kill all the birds. Just as in America, when they killed all these egg-laying chickens, they killed the chickens that had developed immunity. Those immunities are passed from chicken to chicken in the birth process, yes, even through the eggs. In human beings, we pass on immunities, our moms do, through breast milk and through the umbilical process, T cells and crossover immunities that are vitally strong in kids with vitally strong stem cells and immune systems. That's why they fight off viruses. The same thing is true for chickens. So instead of allowing herd immunity to build among food birds, they're destroying all the food birds, meaning the next wave of food birds, guess what they're going to have? Did you guess it? The vaccine. And this is happening under President Trump. His USDA head is okay with this. RFK Jr. is not. We'll continue, I guess, with what has accidentally become a special version of a disciple's view, inspired by the fact that God said to the powerful, you shall not lie. We'll come back. You're listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. If you are in the food production business with poultry or beef, I beg you to pay very careful attention to what is being done to your industry. It is the same exact model that the technocratic medical class used with COVID. It's creating the same exact kill shoots. If you're a rancher, you know what a kill shoot is. It's where you take cattle and you very gradually herd them into a V-shaped fence that gets narrower and narrower and narrower until it gets down to one point where only one cow fits into the kill chute at a time. And if you're an ethical rancher, as I'm sure people listening to this program are, you dispatch that cow quickly and painlessly. And then you process the body, and you do that ethically and well, with honor for the animal, as something created by God to feed us. Of course, we're given dominion over the animals. So if you're in that business or in the poultry business, I beg you to pay very, very careful attention to those kill shoot behaviors, because this is the same psyop, in my judgment, run on a different species with some slight changes to the program. If you know people in this business, I encourage you to use AFR.net and AFR Stream to make sure that people can get access to this. If you're a monthly partner and help fund us monthly, you get access to all the programs, AFR.net. So the Boston Globe wrote a piece, and I want to give credit to the author who decided to write this and to them actually publishing it. David Scharfenberg is the writer. This came out March 9th, 2025. I do want to point out that it is absolutely a nonsensical piece because it fails to take into account the core of the story. So I will intermittently make comment in this, and then we'll get to the aspect of bird flu here through Peter McCullough, because it's vital that you understand that this is the same psyop as I see it. Incidentally, if you're a public health expert and you want to debate any of this with me, get in touch with the program. I'll be happy to have that discussion with you on the air if you like. You can do that at thetoddhermanshow.com, or you can do that, I think it's comments at AFR.net. Here's part of the piece. The headline is, "The case against Anthony Fauci. On the fifth anniversary of the COVID outbreak, a new book examines where American science and politics went wrong." And these are some experts from the article. "The virus felt so frightening back then, so unexpected." Pause. No, it didn't. Not to the people who planned this. Anthony Fauci said President Trump would have to deal with a pandemic. He said it. Event 201 was about dealing with a pandemic. They even used a COVID virus. And they created a fancy little cartoon COVID virus that they ended up using. See how this doesn't make sense without the Event 201 scenario? I mean, you can read it and come away going, "Oh, I didn't know that about the lockdowns." Well, yes, but then you think it's mistakes, even though the author is careful to say it wasn't just mistakes. So let's go back to the piece. "And if public health officials made some mistakes, you might be convinced by this point that they kept schools closed too long. You're willing to cut them some slack. People like infectious disease chief Anthony Fauci were doing the best they could with the information they had. They were following the science. And we got to the other side in better shape than we might have. We made some mistakes during the COVID-19 pandemic. But if there's something comforting in this story, even a little triumphant, there's just one problem. It's almost completely wrong. That's according to Princeton University's political scientists, Stephen Macedo, and Francis Lee's scathing new book, In COVID's Wake, How Our Politics Failed Us." Pause. Didn't fail us. Politics is money, and money is politics. And the people who put together Event 201 love money and have tons of it. Gobs, you might say. They sat down in a room. They wargamed a scenario where a surprise pandemic hit the world and drastic measures were needed. The sort of drastic measures you're going to hear about here through the Boston Globe was decided in advance. They planned it. They did it. They carried it out. It's very, very, very simple. I'm sure they planned out the bird flu scenario. It's another way of getting what they want: platform technologies into biological beings. gene manipulation. So back to the piece. In their telling, Fauci and his ilk didn't follow the science. They betrayed it, pressing for lockdowns, even though experts had warned for years there was little evidence to support such a drastic intervention. Pause. How did I know this in 2020? Again, I stress to you, I am a community college dropout. Now, I give credit to the Lord for revealing it, for allowing me to trust the skepticism God gave me, or for just common sense. What do you mean forcing people to stay inside away from the sunlight's good for them? Or for just watching media coverage? Stay home, stay safe suddenly broke out as a mantra. And then any time the media is completely unskeptical of government, something's wrong. Anytime they all repeat happily the same chant, government officials say you should stay home and stay safe, unless a trip is absolutely vital, okay, then why aren't school buses shut? Or why aren't public city buses shut down? Why have certain businesses been deemed absolutely necessary, like fast food, which kills people over time, but not mom-and-pop restaurants? Why is it that Home Depot is necessary, but not the seed section? Do you remember that? In Michigan? Home Depot was deemed a necessary, important, vital part of the economy, therefore couldn't be shut down. Now, local hardware stores, well, those will just kill everybody. Got to shut those down. But they put yellow tape around the seed sections. Because while you're in the store picking up a necessary item like a T-bolt or a wrench, God forbid you pick up some seeds, because then everyone's going to get COVID. No one could believe this made sense. And no report has asked any questions. Back to the piece from the Boston Globe. When public health officials ran into dissent, they squelched it. Right, exactly as was designed during Event 201. Exactly. I remember being called into program directors' meetings a couple of different times during COVID. One of them was for this. How can you sit there and say masks don't work when you don't know? Well, wait, I do know. Doctors know. They don't wear masks to protect themselves. They wear masks to stop spit, pardon me, and mucus from dripping into patients. That's why those are worn. And then famously during that period of time when I gave them my research and said, here it is, all of a sudden it became clear that they were going to demand that we wore these things at work. Or better yet, when the Canadian fires were bringing smoke across our borders in the separate country of Washington state and people wearing masks, the Center for Disease Control ran ads on our radio station telling people, remember, masks can't protect you from smoke. If you're sensitive to smoke, stay inside. So masks can't protect you from a particle of smoke that you can see, but it can protect you from viral molecules you can never see. I remember speaking this on the air in Seattle during the lockdowns, and it never made a dent with our news department. Or when I had someone on who designed masks, that was their job. Can these stop viral molecules? Oh, not at all. In fact, it makes things worse. What do you mean it makes things worse? If you wear a mask all day, it becomes absolutely nailed with your sweat and what you exhale. It just becomes just so wet. It becomes ineffective to stop even bigger particles. And by the way, when that stuff is drying to your mask and the water eventually dries and evaporates, then the viral particles are coating it. And if you wear the same mask day and again, you're collecting viral particles, not to mention the fact that you're collecting bacteria, which is what killed most people during the Spanish flu. Did you know that? It was, yeah, people say it was pneumonia. You know what kind? Viral. I mean, pardon me, bacterial. Bacterial pneumonia. Why? Because they were wearing the face coverings. How is it that during the lockdowns in the early days of this and masks, I knew all these things? Because I looked. But the media didn't? Back to the Boston Globe. And despite all the sacrifice, the United States had a much higher death rate than other wealthy nations. At a critical moment, American science abandoned its most fundamental tenets. It forsook inquiry. It muzzled debate, exactly as designed. Exactly as Event 201 said would need to happen. And now, forwarding in this article of the Boston Globe, they're talking about the lockdowns and social distancing, referencing here George W. Bush. When Bush returned to the White House, he demanded a full-fledged strategy for the next pandemic. Speeding up vaccine development and isolating the sick wouldn't do. It would have to be a whole-of-society approach, borders, commerce, everything. The key figures in the White House task force charged with developing a plan were Dr. Richard Hatchett, an oncologist-turned-presidential advisor, and Dr. Carter Mitcher, or Mecker, a blunt-spoken executive of the Veterans Administration who developed a reputation as an out-of-the-box thinker. In the early stages of the deliberation, someone put Mecker in touch with Bob Glass, a scientist at Sandia National Laboratories in New Mexico. Listen to this. Glass had recently helped his teenage daughter with a science project that examined how infections spread through social networks. And he'd homed in on a strategy that went back centuries but seemed to be getting little attention in contemporary epidemiology, social distancing. Mecker was intrigued. When he started messing around with Glass's model of disease spread, he alighted on what looked like the single most important strategy for suppressing flu-like viruses. Holy blank, he said in his eureka moment. Nothing big happens until you close the schools. Number one, they missed an important detail about this science experiment. The teenage girl made up 6 feet. I mean, she did some tests and anecdotal tests and said, well, 6 feet seems reasonable. That's what caused this. That's how they used this. And Fauci knew this. They all knew this. You have to believe that what you exhale around other people stops at 6 feet and never does anything else. So if you keep 6 feet away from people as you walk through the grocery store, you can't possibly get the virus because it's not like their exhales landed on the shelves and then you walk by and you moving the wind manipulates the viral particles or that they float up through the air circulation system or that people don't cough. It doesn't land on your clothes. It's impossible to believe. And on the topic of shutting down the schools, well, part of Event 201 was how do you make life so uncomfortable for people that they will do what they rather would not? That is, get injected with an experimental gene sequencing device. Of course, they called them vaccines. They never were. But as the CEO of Bayer admitted, if you told people they were gene sequencing, gene hijacking devices, no one would take them. So, hey, call them vaccines. Shutting down the schools. Epidemiology 101. Kids have stronger immune systems than we do. Much stronger. In upper respiratory viruses, when they encounter a lot of kids, the viruses die. They don't have a chance to mutate. The kids' bodies destroy the virus. The virus does not mutate and therefore become more effective at infecting other people. The more of the population that's going to develop natural immunity that gets contact with the virus and doesn't die because kids were not killed by COVID. There were kids who died with it, but they were already desperately ill. That's a win for society. Everybody knew this. Until COVID. And then all of a sudden, people just forgot. Why are we talking about this? Because they're doing it again. Same PSYOP, different target. Dr. Peter McCullough explains how the latest bird flu strain has lab origins.
That's okay. About what it is. Now, our research at McCullough Foundation, Nick Hulscher, the lead, this strain of bird flu is different. This looks like it has actually come from serial passage research done at the USDA Poultry Research Laboratory in Athens, Georgia. Serial passage is when there's a blend of viral strains that's intentionally put, in this case, in a mallard duck, they were trying to see which strain would pass to the next mallard duck. And the mallard ducks are studied because their gullet is where the virus attaches, but it doesn't go into the lungs. And indeed, they found clade 2, 3, 4, 4, 6 that looked like it transmitted. And sure enough, it, you know, that's where the first cases were, around Athens, Georgia.
Dr. McCullough then describes why the FDA's culling practices don't work with mallards.
Now, the unique aspect to this clade is that it was very mild in the mallard ducks. They could spread it all over in other migratory waterfowl. It quickly spread into mammals. We're now up to about 40 different species of mammals. And so what, you know, the USDA and other public health officials have done, you know, over the last several decades is what's called biosecurity. So biosecurity would be this idea that, well, if one chicken has bird flu, if we sterilize the whole farm, they won't get it again. Well, that doesn't work in this case because the mallard ducks will just continue to reinfect the farms. In fact, a guest on that clip you showed pointed that out. So immediately we think we should not do culling because of the fact we can't stop the reinfection with the mallard ducks. But this is how they do it.
When we come back, the most important thing you will hear about our food supply from Dr. Peter McCullough, and why I believe this is the same PSYOP with a different species, same PSYOP that they did to us with COVID. Then we'll get into the tower babbling and a personal note. Stay tuned for that. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. To Disciples View, we'll get to the personal notes segment and the tire babbling as we wrap up this special program. It's just kind of took over. This is such a vital thing, I think, for people to understand. We've been on the 5-year anniversary of the lockdowns, and just reminders of where we've been at. So number one, there was never a lockdown. Only key segments of societies were locked down. Let's just do a quick review. Gyms were closed down. Abortion clinics were not. Health clubs were closed down, but not alcohol stores or drug stores, and that is marijuana stores in the countries like Washington and the separate countries like California. Nevada made an argument to get the strip clubs and casinos reopened because those were necessary businesses, vital, you'd say. Small hardware stores were death traps. We couldn't possibly open those, but Home Depot could open, but not the seed section. None of it made sense because it wasn't supposed to. All of it was pre-planned through an event called Event 201, because they said, here's what we're going to do. They rehearsed it. They war-gamed it. They did it. And now the Boston Globe has run this piece saying, hey, think again about COVID. It was really bad. Politics got in the way. They weren't following the science. They departed the science. Right. They departed the science in favor of Event 201's plan. That's what they did. And the Mockingbird media played along. So what was the goal? To get you injected. Full stop. Full stop. That was the goal. Period. Why do I know that? Because all the behaviors led to, it puts the needle in its skin if it wants to live again. All of them. They paid Harvard, I think it was $45 million to study, I believe it was 7 different ways to convince people to get injected. Number one was to accuse them of killing their grandmas and grandpas. That's fear of loss. Fear of guilt. The other one was patriotic, do it for a country. That one didn't work really well. The other was to be with the crowd. The other was to be brave. That one didn't work super well. All your kids will die if you don't do it. That was pretty effective. All of it was about getting you injected. These companies began filing patents before the so-called pandemic was announced. We've been through all of this. Many of us saw from the very beginning, none of this makes sense. So in the case of bird flu, we were just listening to Peter McCullough, who says, in his opinion, this bird flu came out of a USDA lab, just like COVID, probably came out of the Wuhan lab. It's a gain of function type thing that they were doing at the USDA, just like the gain of function thing they were doing at Wuhan. You remember during the lockdowns that they pretended there was no such thing as herd immunity? The CDC and the World Health Organization literally pretended it didn't exist. The Mockingbird media played along. Citing so-called herd immunity, COVID critics spreading disinformation claim, however, public experts say, herd immunity can't happen without vaccines. Huge lie. So we just listened to Peter McCullough say they probably made this bird flu to see that it would get into other mammals. It's into other mammals. Now we've got the USDA saying we're going to have to inject beef cattle with this. They've been culling birds, even birds who have natural immunity. Natural immunity they could pass on to future generations of birds. But why do that? Here's why. Because they're setting up a circumstance where all birds need this new platform technology, which manipulates the bodies of birds and other mammals into producing something their bodies aren't supposed to produce. This is the last bit of Peter McCullough. He was talking with Del Bigtree. McCullough here goes into more detail about how the FDA's testing and culling processes are ineffective and slow.
This is how they do it, Del. They will take samples of about 11 birds on different swabs, put it into the same test tube, and then do another 11, and then a different test tube, and then they send it off. Now, they throw the birds back into the coop or the bin, so they don't know which birds are tested. And so when one of the tubes turns positive, you never know which bird. The decision is to cull them, to kill them all. And when they extinguish all the birds by either pulling the oxygen out of the chambers or smothering them with foam, what happens is the whole facility has to be sterilized, disinfected, and our research shows, Del, it's taken offline for 111 days.
So 111 days, no food produced, massive costs, and the population of birds that had natural immunity are not allowed to pass it on to future generations of birds. Did you get the part about how they test? They use one swab to test 11 birds. That goes into test tube A. Another swab to test 11 birds. That goes into test tube B. If the tests come back positive, they don't know which birds already have immunity.
Because they don't want to know which birds have natural immunity.
Because the goal is to kill the birds. So the message is this to people in the poultry and beef business. Hey, look, you can either go ahead and take the beautiful injections into your animals and into the food supply and force people to eat the results. Or we could just come along and kill all your birds. Take you offline for 111 days. You choose. To us, it puts the needle in its skin if it wants to work again, live again, travel again. To the people in the food supply, you put the needle in their skin if you want to pay your family again. Please resist. Please demand that President Trump tell his USDA director no. You want to kill the sick animals? Fine. You let the animals that have natural immunity live and pass it on. Please don't give in to this. As frustrating as it can be, given segments like this, or in fact shows like this today, we actually on this program thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
It is not a criminal violation to enter the country illegally. It's not a criminal. It's a crime. It's not a crime.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new opener featuring Jasmine Crockett, the fine work of Randy. Thank you, Randy. Three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling. NBC tried to spin up a story about Elon Musk and Marco Rubio, and President Trump shut it down.
No, Tlash, I was there. You're just a troublemaker. And you're not supposed to be asking that question because we're talking about the World Cup. Elon gets along great with Marco, and they're both doing a fantastic job. There is no Tlash.
Mr. President,
who are you with? Who are you with?
NBC.
Oh, no wonder. That's enough. NBC.
Who has more authority, Elon Musk or the Secretary?
Any other questions about the World Cup?
Sometimes I do find him very funny, and I'm not a politics and popcorn guy. Other times, his personality rubs me wrong. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling, Justin Trudeau shed tears for his country live on television.
On a personal level, I've made sure that every single day in this office, I put Canadians first, that I have people's backs. And that's why I'm here to tell you all that we got you. Even in the very last days of this government, we will not let Canadians down today and long into the future.
You know that the new Premier of Canada was not elected, right? You know he's been installed. They did every trick in the book to avoid an election because Trudeau's people would have lost. Because Trudeau seized and froze the bank accounts of truckers and other people who protested his policies of putting Canadians first by arresting them and slamming them onto the floor, handcuffed for not wearing masks and such. Always putting Canada first. Last soundbite, today's Tower Babbling, late night funny man. Jimmy Kimmel claimed that Donald Trump's plan is to outlaw SMART.
He set in motion his plan to dissolve the Department of Education. He directed his new Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, the one from wrestling, that's right. WWE co-founder Linda McMahon will supervise the important work of dismantling the Department of Education. Good for him, though. Another genius tactical move. I'll tell you why. He keeps getting attacked by all these smart people. What does he do? He outlaws SMART. There will be no more SMART.
This is so funny. Oh, by the way, the more money the Department of Education got, the worse outcomes American students got. But hey, why let that bother you, Jimmy? And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
On a personal note today, it's always fascinating to me to look back in time at little interactions that from time to time bubble up into my mind. Things that can cause me to almost travel back in time. Sometimes it smells. There is a scent in the air right now of our pine trees coming back to life. And it takes me back to moments on my father's property. My father lived over the hills from us. He would be so thrilled with where we live because of the backyard and the 400 acres. It's not my property. We have some acreage, but not that. But we're blessed to live on state land and some local land that can't be built on. It's beautiful. It's the smell of the pine cones. It's also the memories of being alone with my father. Now, I've shared with you the fact that my father was not a healthy man, mentally or physically. And he chose the physical part because he refused to participate in things that would make him healthy. Part of it was a rebel nature. Part of it was self-hatred. He wasn't worth it. But in the woods, he was different. In the woods, he was who he always wanted to be. My father wanted to be a mountain man and a car mechanic. He did not want his master's degree in social work. He did that to please his dad, whom he loved. But he never heard his father say he loved him until he was in the hospital dying. And Grandpa did tell him he loved him. Grandpa demonstrated it, just didn't say it. But my dad was a different man in the woods because he felt skilled. I remember him teaching me how to zero a target, how to zero my weapon. That is to adjust the sights, or if we were using a scope, how to adjust them down so that you knew the weapon was solid so that you could trust it. I remember my father teaching me how to build a fire. You might not always have matches. There are ways to do it without matches. It's hard, but I'll show you. How to build an elementary shelter. I remember sleeping in one of those elementary shelters that my father and I made. And I remember the warmth. Him in his sleeping bag, me in mine. My father was huge. He put off a lot of body warmth, but he snored. I always wondered if a bear was going to interpret his snoring as another bear. It was so loud. I would pay a lot of money to be woken up by his snoring. To hear it one more time. I remember waking up and him saying, "You have to build the fire if you want hot food. We can put coffee in cold water and drink it that way. And we try to eat these things. You got to build the fire. It's on you." And he watched patiently and said nothing. And it took a while. And then I got the fire built eventually. I remember the joy watching my father as he poured the coffee, drank it, and said, "Good coffee." High praise. Good coffee. I remember my father when I first took a life of a deer. I'd taken lives of birds, but deer were substantial. They're like us. They're mammals. And we approached the deer, and it died. It died instantly, praise God. I remember stopping and looking at it. My dad said, "Is it what you expected?" I said, "I'm happy." But he was just standing here, doing nothing. And now he's gone. And he goes, "It's a heck of a thing taking a life. It's okay to reflect. It's okay to take a while. When we love these animals." I'd pay anything to hear that again. It's okay to reflect. And it was the metaphor of hunting my dad used to make me promise that if he were ever in the hospital and it got past the point of no return, that I would make it go quickly. He went back to that metaphor with me when he was sick. When I think he knew he'd never make it out of the hospital, we were sitting there one day, and I'd been reading Lonesome Dove to him, and Dad said, "Do you remember the talk we had about animals that are in pain? Do you remember that deer that was gut shot?" "Yep. I remember that we took half a day to find it and to dispatch it." He goes, "Don't let me suffer. When it's past the point of no return, please, please, make it go quickly. And remember, son, when I die, do not mourn my body. I won't be there. I ask you to walk away. I will not be there. Think of my soul." I'd pay anything to hear him snore one more time. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ and make disciples of all nations until God decides we can all speak again together. May his peace that transcends all understanding wash over you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been a Disciples View.